folks. Welcome to the Creative Language Learning Podcast with Kirsten Ammers. Hello, everybody. Welcome to a second episode of Creative Language Learning, a little series of interviews that I am conducting for the Fluent Language blog, which you can read over at fluentlanguage.co.uk. Today I'm holding my microphone because it used to be on this GorillaPod stand, and the GorillaPod stand has magically disappeared, probably because it's not mine, it's my boyfriend's. So... And there's a cat, so we're all professional this morning and ready to go into the corporate world and perform. And as such, I am presenting you a lovely interview with a very, very generous man who gave me some of his time and so a lot of information. His name is Peter Rodway from Specialist Language Solutions. And Specialist Language Solutions teach languages to English-speaking businesses. So they are, if you want to go and export, if you want to work in another country, if your company is foreign owned, you don't understand what your boss is saying, these are the people to go to, Specialist Language Solutions. We had a really interesting conversation. We discussed some programs for going abroad. We discussed what is the absolutely essential ingredient for learning a foreign language if you're doing it for your job. And we also talked about whether companies in England even need language skills, because everybody speaks English in the world, right? So this is promising to be really, really interesting. And if you either fast forward or stay on till the end, we're also going to talk about cultural differences between Germans, Japanese and Brits, which we thought was really interesting. Probably proper Germans. Don't let their cat meow all over the podcasts. And in the end, we also talked about some career tips and where do you put your language on your CV? My question to Peter Rodway. So hopefully, I think you should really enjoy this. And if we're ready, let's just go straight to the interview. Hey, Peter.
So my name is Peter Rodway. I'm the director of a company called Specialist Language Courses. We are an educational consultancy, corporate training organization and agency.
Mm-hmm. And how did you get into language teaching or language learning? Are you a learner yourself?
I would like to think I was a learner, but I think in all honesty, you do need to dedicate, you know, a little bit of time to learning a language effectively. And running a business, a small business, I don't have a lot of time, unfortunately. So my classroom learning happened a long time ago. I speak Japanese to an intermediate level.
Very good. Did you live in Japan?
Yes, yeah, I did. Yeah, I lived there for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, my teaching background, teaching experience comes from there. I took the route that might be familiar to you and to the people that read your blog, which is going out to Asia to teach English.
Oh, yes, of course. There's various schemes that you can do. I'm aware of JET.
Yep, JET is a really good one. The JET scheme... You can stay, don't quote me on this, although you're quoting me on this. I think it's a 2-year period, perhaps more.
Mm-hmm.
JET scheme, you tend to be placed in more rural areas, so away from the bigger cities,
mm-hmm.
Which is a wonderful experience.
As it's a government scheme, if I'm correct.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's serving, so usually kind of serving smaller communities. And I've met people, I wasn't on the JET scheme myself, but I've met people that were, and they had a really wonderful time in those places.
Mm-hmm. These days you work obviously with businesses. Is that your main area? Your main clients are businesses?
Yes, that's right. So when I came back from Japan, I worked with a great company in Brighton called Cactus Language Training, where I was the head of their corporate training department. And that's where I kind of gained my experience working with businesses. The client base there is similar to the client base that we serve now at Specialist Language Courses. Which is, you know, really dealing with businesses and companies, primarily in the UK, but internationally as well. Those are primarily finance companies, fashion companies, energy companies, and relocation companies.
Oh, that's very interesting. And how does it work? Do the companies approach you? Do you go out looking for them? Do they know they have a need before?
It's broken down in a few different kind of fairly easily to define ways. There are language training programs that go across a company. So a large number of potential trainees where it's a decision that's been taken, perhaps by group training or, the HR director, somebody like that, where, it may or may not go out to tender. You receive private and public tenders, big language training companies do. We're not a big one yet ourselves, but we still receive the odd tender request.
Mm-hmm.
Those are fairly, I would say, complicated affairs. You have to put a good pitch together and a good tender response together. So those are the larger ones, the kind of turnkey projects. But also you'll get much smaller projects, where it's maybe an individual or a group of people in an office somewhere in the UK or internationally. And due to the, the budgets of that, that's normally a team leader or an office manager who's identified a need to support their staff.
Mm-hmm.
And in those ones, it's normally a case of, writing a proposal, having a meeting with them, doing a training needs analysis and then proposing something back to them.
Mm. What's the most fun industry to work in?
Fun industry? I think it depends on your definition of fun. let me think. It's always been interesting working with fashion companies because you get to see a little bit of the inside of how those companies work. And, of course, there's lots of beautiful people wandering around in their offices. So it's interesting to go for a meeting there. I've found a lot of the finance companies, I won't say anything about any particular companies in case they end up listening to this, but there's a real difference in culture in a lot of finance companies. You might expect them to all be kind of similar from the outside, but there's a real mix of different ways of working and different people working for big financial companies. For example, in the Canary Wharf area. So I've always found that interesting as well.
Oh, that's very interesting. And have you ever? Because obviously you're probably a bit aware of what kind of things I write on my blog, and I quite often come back to the topics around adult learning.
Yes.
And whether there is a cutoff age about language learning, which I personally don't believe in at all.
Right.
And also whether there are certain people who are more capable than others. So have you ever, because you must have taught thousands of people.
Yeah.
Have you ever found anyone who's completely incapable? Do you find people who struggle more?
I think with company training, I think the reality is if a company has decided to spend training budget on somebody for a language course, which, compared to some forms of training is probably considered a little bit of a luxury, those individuals or groups, they're probably well-valued employees, and those types of companies who are spending money, they're well-valued employees in general. I don't want to kind of use too broad a brush, but in general, they're very intelligent, articulate, educated people to begin with, to be in those kind of positions. So, yes, the types of people that go on these corporate language training courses, they can apply themselves, they can still learn, and the results are usually fairly good. The only people who can't really kind of get on, I would say, it's not to do with their innate abilities, it's more to do with how time poor they are and the fact that they can't apply the correct amount of time to their studies. They certainly can't do any homework or anything like that.
Oh yes, I can come across that also. So I kind of agree with you on that one. Do you have any tips, or what kind of tips do you give them if you see that they're really struggling but they want to make it work?
Yes, I think you need to relate it back to a few things for these people. One is, of course, bringing it back to, well, there is a business need. So, you know, don't feel bad about, you know, giving up some of your time to do this, because it is being paid for by the company. It is a business need. It is going to affect your productivity at work. So, you know, go ahead and put the effort in. The other is, you know, if they're working, a lot of them are working internationally, and there's no reason that they can't, you know, still learn a language while having a little bit of fun. You know, they can talk to their clients or their colleagues or their counterparts about something non-business related and still use the language, which is something they should be doing. And then for me, just in terms of a learning tip, I, you know, back from when I was a teacher, and you'll probably agree with this, Kirsten, is, you know, you don't have to, you know, learn from a textbook or learn grammatical structures. It's probably best if you can spend some of your own time learning through a medium that's interesting or fun to you. You know, reading a comic book, watching a movie, something like that, so
Absolutely.
That you're still exposed to the language.
Mm-hmm. And two questions that I had for you about companies in particular and using a language in your career, etc.
Yeah,
and the
yeah.
first one is really, does a company in England or yeah. it generally in the English speaking world, where so many people believe and potentially rightfully believe that they don't really need to learn a foreign language because the world speaks English, which is rather true in the business world in particular, do they ever really need to train their employees in another language? Why do they do it?
Yes, there's quite a few reasons. One major one, one thing I should probably point out about big multinational companies in London, where most of our clients are, you know, sadly for British workforce, or not sadly, but it's just the way it is, a lot of these people working in these companies are international people. You know, you go to, you know, an energy company, a finance company, a fashion company, and, you know, it's not all Brits working in those offices. It's Europeans, it's, mm-hmm. it's Asian people. So, yes, there are, you know, genuine language needs in there. Also, they're in multicultural teams. So they may have language issues to help them work together. Also, there's another potential that it's not UK owned, the company, so foreign ownership. You know, if you're working in a London office, but the parent company is Japanese or Italian, you may want to learn a little bit about your employers and gain an insight into their structure through language, which, as you know, you can learn a lot about culture through language learning, and probably get a bit of a leg up as well. You know, mm-hmm. if you're working for a Russian finance company and you learn a bit of Russian, you're probably better able to communicate with your seniors and people in head office in Moscow.
Yes, and that's particularly a point I really want to draw attention to, because I think you're saying something so important there, that when you're learning a language, you always learn more than just the language.
Yes.
You enter into life in a different, completely different world, in a sense. So a lot of people use the word culture. So you become familiar with a culture on a level that you can't just read about.
Absolutely. Just understanding how a certain language will convey a certain idea or a certain image, the words that are used, the structures that are used, sometimes depending on the language, are very different to English. And, you know, English might not even be your mother tongue, but it's, you know, different to your mother tongue. And you think, well, why do they say it like that? Why do they use this word? You know, and what's the underlying meaning culturally from where that's come from?
Oh, absolutely. I had a very interesting experience with a group of individuals that I teach at the moment, and we were sorting German words into positive, negative, or neutral. Mm-hmm. And the German word practical,
yep.
to me, and probably to a lot of people in German, is an absolute positive.
Right.
If something's practical, it's really, you know, that's good. You're going to buy it because it's practical. It's an adverb word.
This is neutral to us, probably.
Absolutely. They all put it in neutral. And I, to me, that was like, what? This isn't neutral. This is a great thing. And that was very telling. So there is a real truth in how you see the world through language.
Yeah, absolutely. Very, very much so. And, you know, that when I remember from when I was learning Japanese, there are a lot of words that have a negative connotation, not rude words, but just, you know, things like, you know, saying something, saying it's very bad or very difficult. And the Japanese will find a different way of saying that. Even though the English translation, I'm quite happy using those negative terms. Culturally in Japan, sometimes it's better to find a different way of saying it.
Oh yeah, and I mean, equally having come from a foreign country and worked in Britain, Brits hedge an awful lot as well, which means that they cover up what they're really saying.
Yes,
so if they
yes.
say you might want to reconsider, that's a really bad thing. Whereas in Germany, if somebody said you might want to reconsider, you go, yeah, but I won't.
Yeah. You might want to reconsider. It probably means you better go away and do it again.
Exactly.
In English,
it means leave it. This is terrible.
That's very true. And, you know, that's an interesting thing about business English as well. There's a lot of kind of subtleties to business English that senior people whose English is not their mother tongue and working in London, it's very interesting for them to find out these uses because it affects how they're able to work with teams of people and their own employees. You know, we've had this many times where senior you know, good, strong corporate English language trainers have almost been able to take on a mentorship role with business people in these companies because they're not just talking about language anymore. They're talking about the best way to influence and affect members of their team.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's how you say something is such a big part of language learning, especially when, you know, in business language, it's so important how you deal with people and you actually want to make them do something.
Yeah.
Okay, and I have one final question for you, which is really interesting because I get asked a lot, and I know that a lot of people who read Fluent are motivated by the idea of becoming more employable through learning a language, and they want to find a job where they're using a language. So it's important to mention, A, that there's not just translation out there, but it's actually a whole wide world where you can use your language.
Absolutely.
And secondly, really, so my questions really would be, what are your top tips for incorporating languages in a career and how to make themselves more employable? Do you think they have to move to London?
No, not necessarily. I think that what people have to understand or probably do understand, I mean, certainly you will know this and people who follow you will know this, is that it's, you know, it's an increasingly competitive and internationalized market when it comes to jobs. So, you know, if you're going for a position and somebody with the same educational background as you, you know, similar experience to you, but it just so happens that they can also speak Spanish and German, you know, who's the person going to choose? You know, I think language skills, you know, perhaps they've been undervalued in the past, but now workforces in Europe are more mobile. It's definitely something that you should look to have, you know, under your belt.
Mm-hmm. And where would you put your language on a CV?
Where would I put my language on a CV? That's a very good question, and not one that I've thought about. I mean, I put it in my own CV. It's in my kind of other skills section, which is probably not where it should be because it's at the bottom of my CV. And that's a very good question, Kirsten, something that I'd have to reconsider.
I always used to put it at the bottom. And now, with new, more American CVs coming in, you can write a little profile for yourself at the top.
Yeah, that's right.
Which I hate because I don't know what to say about myself. But I do say I speak four languages.
Yes. And I think, you know, I'm not an expert on CV writing, but certainly, you know, if you want to, you know, present yourself as a kind of an international person and that language skills are one of the, you know, one of your key attributes, then yes, it should definitely be moved from the foot of the CV up to your personal statement or your profile.
Oh, that's brilliant. Right. Thank you very much, Peter. So that's pretty much me having exhausted my questions. Is there anything else you'd like to say to our readers or followers? Where can they find you online?
Yes, they can find us online. It's www.specialistlanguagecourses.com. You know, we can help if you are a teacher of languages. We run a lot of teacher training courses. We're also an educational agent. So if you wanted to go and study abroad anywhere, we can help you with that. We can give you advice on the best schools and the best locations. And find us on Facebook as well. The Facebook and Twitter, social media stuff, it's not all so serious and full of business speak about corporate language training. There's a lot of fun language learning things on there as well, so follow us there.
All right, that was the end of the interview. Thanks so much to Peter, who was a lovely, lovely person to talk to. Doesn't he have the nicest accent? He sounds so good. He's got the radio voice, really. So well done, Peter. Thank you very, very much. And guys, I really, really want you to take action. Have a think about this thing with the languages on the CV. Get out your old CV, have a look at it and think about, can I present myself better? And can I present my language skills better? Because that's what we're after. They do make you employable. They do make you stand out. You're competing in a busy workplace out there. You know, make yourselves particularly sexy. Make yourselves stand out. Languages are needed in lots of businesses, not just the international ones. So make sure you shout it out if you do have language skills, because it's going to be in your favor and it's going to get you somewhere. And if you want, why not post a copy of your CV or send me a little bit of feedback. Let me know if you agree that languages should be at the top of your CV and that's where they belong. Right. That's the end of my first podcast episode that I have actually made up to be a podcast episode. I'm so pleased. Peter didn't even know at the time that this was going to be a podcast episode, so I bet he's dead pleased. And I need to thank him, and I need to thank you guys for staying with me for a whole 21 minutes and 5 seconds and listening. So let's roll the outro.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Language Learning Podcast, guys. Don't forget to subscribe and rate this podcast in iTunes, particularly if you enjoyed it. And don't forget that you can also let me know what you're thinking. You can email Kerstin, that's K-E-R-S-T-I-N, at fluentlanguage.co.uk, or you can follow me on Twitter, and it's simply Fluent Language on there. I'm really looking forward to hearing from you, and I'll see you next time. Goodbye.